This is Gulf Coast Life from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. WGCU, in partnership with the League of Women Voters of Lee County and the News Press, recently held a forum with candidates running for seats on the Lee County School Board. This year, four seats on the board are up for election for four-year terms, including School Board Districts 1, District 4, District 5, and the at-large District 6. The Lee County School Board governs Florida's 8th largest school district and the 27th largest in the country, with more than 100,000 K-12 students and more than 12,000 full and part-time employees. The board's decisions affect not only public schools, but also property taxes, school construction, and educational priorities throughout the county. In Florida, a nonpartisan school board candidate who receives more than 50% of the vote in a primary election wins the seat. So even in districts with more than two candidates running, it's possible the elections could be decided in the primary. All 11 qualified candidates were invited to participate in the forum. Six candidates actually did, including Jen McDaigle, who's seeking the District 1 seat, Carl Baxter and incumbent Debbie Jordan in the District 4 race, Crystal Johnson and Carlene Santillis in the District 5 election, and India Palencia in the District 6 contest. The other five candidates all declined to participate or were otherwise unable to attend. The roughly 90-minute forum took place July 9th in the Water School at Florida Gulf Coast University and was co-moderated by me and News Press senior reporter Amy Bennett-Williams. For today's episode of Gulf Coast Life, we're presenting a condensed version of the forum. To listen to or watch the full event, go to WGCU.org/GCL or visit WGCU Public Media's Facebook page. Let's hear that forum now, beginning with the participating candidates' opening statements.
Good evening. Thank you to the League of Women Voters, FGCU, and the other host coordinators for putting on tonight's candidate forum. My name is Carlene Santillis. I am the best candidate for Lee County School Board District 5. A little bit about me. I am the proud daughter of Haitian immigrant parents. I am a business owner and a former teacher. I'm running because every child deserves an opportunity at a quality education, regardless of their background or zip code. Right now, many of our students are reading below grade level, and teachers are stretched very thin, support staff feels undervalued, and parents feel dismissed. I believe in safe schools, strong basics in reading and math, supporting teachers and staff, and spending your tax dollars wisely. I'm not a career politician. I'm a neighbor, a mother, a grandmother, someone who's lived the experiences, who's in the trenches, and knows the challenges. I'm here to listen, to lead with integrity, and to put our children first. Again, thank you for the invitation, and I look forward to tonight's conversation.
Thank you. And Jen?
Good evening. I'm Jen McDaigle, and I'm running for Lee County School Board, District 1, because I believe that every child deserves a future-ready schools with deeply human values. Our students, teachers, and staff right now, as you kind of alluded to, are not receiving the resources and support that they need to truly be successful in the world that they are inheriting. My life is basically an after-school special for what happens when and how life-changing it is when schools decide that your child matters. I was raised right here in Florida by a single mom working multiple jobs in the public schools. And school was more than an education for me. It was safety, it was nourishment, it was a creative outlet. And that's why I believe our schools must support the whole child. I'm also running because I have two children on opposite sides of the spectrum. My oldest daughter was born with a really rare neurodegenerative disease, and my wife and I have spent years advocating on her behalf in the Lee County systems until she passed away in 2023. And now, as our four-year-old is getting ready to start kindergarten, we've been researching the Lee County Public Schools. And as we've continued to research that, it's become abundantly clear that our schools are not preparing our children for the world that they're going to inherit, a world that's rapidly being reshaped by AI and technology, and a world where human connection is going to be more important than ever before. I'm running to ensure every child anywhere on the spectrum receives a future-ready education with deeply human values.
Thank you. And Debbie Jordan.
Good evening. I am going to read this because if I don't, I'll just keep on speaking. But I want to thank the League of Women Voters, WGCU, and the News Press for hosting this forum and giving the candidates the opportunity to share our vision with the community. My name is Debbie Jordan, and I am proud to serve as your Lee County School Board member for District 4. I have lived in Lee County for over 50 years, raised my family here, and I've had the privilege of serving on the board since 2018. During that time, I've served as vice chair and chair, working hard to make thoughtful decisions that put students first every time. I'm running for re-election because I believe public education is the foundation of a strong community. I believe every student deserves the opportunity to succeed. Every teacher and staff member deserves our support and respect, and every taxpayer deserves responsible stewardship for their dollars. My approach has always been simple: listen, ask questions, do the work, make the decisions based on what is best for our students and our community, not politics. I will continue to be the voice for all families, including those who feel that they may not always be heard. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to continue serving, and I look forward to the questions.
Thank you. And next, Carl Baxter.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much, guys, for putting on this forum tonight. I'm Carl Baxter, running for Lee County School Board District 4 here in Lee County. I'm a Floridian, just one, actually, county over, rural area. Amy knows about that. Very basic, you know. I'm very simple. I'm sharing sentiments with all these people that prior to me. I'm going to keep it very simple with you. The number one thing is, and I believe in term limits, time brings about a change. And when you're staying neutral, that means you don't go anywhere. You don't do anything. Number one, it's very, very simple. I'm here to support our staff. I'm here to fight for the children. Not only that, I believe in safe schools. All those things are all great. That's wonderful, and that's beautiful. But the question we've got to ask ourselves, how are we setting these people up, or these kids and our staff up for future success? Number one, you can count on Carl because, number one, I'm going to be your voice. I'm going to get you the real answers. The first thing I'm going to do is basically line item forensic audit. That's number one. You know, I've served on some of these boards. I've been on state-level board, statewide policy. I've served on several boards for local. So I've been around the school board for a long time, and all of our people know me. So number one, I'm going to be your voice. I'm the man for the moment. I'd love to have your vote. Not so much as that, but I've been on a listening tour, and I've heard a lot.
Thank you very much. And your opening statement, India Palencia.
Thank you, John. And thank you to WGCU, the League of Women Voters, and the News Press for hosting us tonight. It's wonderful to have this opportunity to speak to everyone. And thank you to everyone in the room for coming to hear from all of us. A little bit about me. So, yes, my name is India Palencia. I'm running for Lee County School Board District 6, which is the fancy way of telling you everyone who lives in Lee County will see me on their ballot in August. I'm running because I'm a mom of three kids that are in our public schools. I'm a substitute teacher, and I've been a community advocate attending our school board meetings for years. And I noticed a very disturbing trend with many of the financial decisions that our board was making. And that I've come to understand that your budget reflects your values. And right now, the values that are being reflected by our board don't reflect what our community needs. So I can trace all of the things that we will talk to you about tonight that we want to change in our community back to how our budget is spent. And it goes back to making sure that our funds, the nearly $2.9 billion, yes, that's a B, dollar budget that we have, gets put back towards our classrooms, and we need to make sure that we're asking the question, will this make the educational outcomes of our community and our kids better? So I look forward to your questions, and I'm excited to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. And Crystal Johnson, your opening statement.
Thank you for inviting me to attend this community forum this evening. And my name is Crystal Johnson. I am a candidate for Lee County School Board, District 5. But more importantly, my experience is hands-on. I've worked directly with students, supported families, and seen firsthand both the strengths and the gaps in our school system. Right now, Our district is facing serious challenges. Parents don't feel heard, teachers don't feel supported, and too many students are being left behind. That is why I'm running. I'm running to restore confidence in our students, in our parents, and in our schools. My focus is simple: stronger discipline and academic accountability, better support and respect for our teachers, and real partnerships with parents and the community. I'm not a career politician. I am someone who shows up, listens, and stands up for what is right. I believe we can build a school system where every child has the opportunity to succeed, every teacher feels valued, and every parent feels confident. I'm Crystal Johnson, candidate for Lee County School Board, District 5. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we're going to get to the questions. The first one is, considering school libraries and supplementary classroom materials, how do you balance an individual's parental rights with the rights of other families who may want access to the questioned resources? And the first person to answer is India.
Oh, thank you, Amy. I 100% support parental rights. I think what we have in place today strikes a very wonderful balance because there is a media consent form that the parents can go into. Every year I know I fill out three of them for all three of my kids. And we can say what our kids have access to. Where we draw the line is when somebody tells me what my kid can have access to, and that's where the parental rights can get trampled upon. So I like the balance that we have struck right now in our community. I think it's a very positive thing. I think it's great that parents can go in. I would like to see a little more easily facilitated. I'm not super happy with the system that our school district uses, which is Focus. It's very difficult to use. It's like MS-DOS. So if you're a parent and you're having to do it for three kids, it takes you quite some time, which can be discouraging. And then we end up having families who don't actually go in and fill out that media consent form. And then their kid doesn't really have any access to any of the media. And as we know, reading is such a critical thing for any kid. And it buds across all the subjects. It boosts learning. So it's so important that we make that process easy for the parents and the families to go in and get that media access form done. And it's a great balance that we have today. Thank you.
Thank you. Next person to answer is Debbie.
Well, this has been a sore subject for myself. We used to have where the resources, your library, the kids, we had a policy where you would have to opt out. So kids had the right to go to the library and get a book out. About 2 years ago, it switched where now you have to opt in. So in order for a child to go to the library and collect the book, to read, they have to have their signatures, the signature of their parents. I do believe in parents' rights. I don't believe that parents' rights have ever gone away. I mean, I still have parents' rights. I have grandparents' rights. It's like we have the rights for our children. We can pick and choose what we want for our kids. It's the law. However, when we have this policy where they're opting in, there are so many parents and families who forget to go into Focus to fill this out. So if they're not filling out that form, that child can go to the library, and guess what? He's not or she is not going to be able to sign out a book because it has not been signed. And that goes the same with the code of conduct. So that's always been something with me. It's like, how do we ensure that the parents are reading these, subjects, and how are we making sure that they are signing off what is best for their child? And in the end, who loses? So I think that we really need to take a better look on how do we do that, and how do we ensure that every parent is seeing, this form to fill? Thank you.
And next is Carlene.
Really quickly, I believe in the parents have a right to be involved in the resources that their children are going to be reading. They have to be involved in it. I will echo Debbie's and India's thoughts in terms of making sure that the system is accessible. Specifically for my area in District 5, because our area is a majority minority community, a majority of our constituents in the area speak a second language. So there should be an opportunity for them to have the information in their language. We need to be able to meet the parents where they are.
Thank you. And now, Crystal.
I believe in communication with parents. I believe that parents have the right to the information they desire. So if they want to know and they ask the question, I believe we should. It is the school's duty, and they have to try to answer those parents because they're trusting you with their children. So if I have a question about anything that my child is learning, reading, or doing at school, we owe them an answer.
All right, thank you.
All right, and next, Carl.
Very simple. I like to, let's keep this rolling because, you know, I kind of agree with all these all these guys up here. It's very simple. We've got to have parent involvement. And if you don't let those parents, and I believe in universal choice, if those parents want any information about their kids, they should have that. And I, with those forms, what you're saying about Dr. Valencia, and I know I've currently, you know, you and I both are substitute teachers, and we've seen this stuff happen. So in a nutshell, I agree with all my counterparts here, but you've got to give those parents access and get, long if you're keeping those parents involved, they're automatically going to know what's going on with their students. And if they're staying involved, and that's why I'm really big on parent engagement, really big on parent engagement. And I've been on this listening tour, and you're going to hear some of these tours we're going on tonight, because when you listen and let those parents, they're going to tell you, trust me, they're going to tell you what's going on. And you just follow with that. So the bottom line is, yes, I totally believe that those parents should have access to anything as far as library. And I worked in the library here. You know, that's, I was started in the library, actually, as a librarian for almost over a year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jen.
Thank you. So, yeah, this is a question that I've thought a lot about. I absolutely believe in parental rights, and they should have access to anything they want to see from their child within the school. And the way that it's set up, to Debbie's point, is so that there is a parent, and it's a requirement that a parent with a child in the school is involved from the beginning when decisions are made. And then in addition to that, there's an option to object even after things are in use. There's a very specific process to follow for that. So I feel like the system is set up now where parents have a lot of access to see what's happening. It could be easier, as India was saying, the system that we're using. But I also think we need to trust the leaders that we are putting in place, the professionals, the librarians that have been taught how to decide which children get to access which books. I think, you know, as a child growing up with a single mom, if my mom needed to find a form to opt me in, I wouldn't have been able to read any books, and reading is absolutely critical. So I think parents should have absolute right to opt their child out of anything that they don't want them to learn, but children should be automatically opted in to be able to read, and that we should trust our leaders to make sure that they're getting the right things, because the statutes are written in such a way that they would have to do so.
All right, thank you. And our next question deals with tech. It's, what do you see as the role of technology and digital resources in education? And we'll start with Carl.
Well, very simple. This AI has really taken over. A very good question. With this AI taken over, and a lot of the students love iReady, and I think if we get rid of some of those resources, and put those back into the classroom with AI taken over. So role of technology is great. But I think we just need to get back to the basic of reading, writing, and arithmetic. All right, get back to the basics. And digital resources are great. And in some forms it's work, some forms it doesn't. So I think it's all individually merited. But if we would just stick to the same basic reading, writing, arithmetic, civics, back on this stuff, I think we'll have a great, great outcome. Thank you.
All right, and Crystal Johnson.
Well, I see technology as something beneficial to the students, especially in the world we live in today. However, I agree with Carl as far as it should not be all day we're on our Chromebooks. We should have more like a technology program, you know, an opportunity to work with our Chromebooks, but not to the extent that we're doing all of our lessons from 9:45 until 4:15, we're on Chromebooks. So that's how I feel about technology. It's very needed, but not at the way that the district is using it right now. And I'm in the classroom every day, so I can tell you, yes, they're on Chromebooks from sunup until sundown.
And Jen McDaigle.
Thank you. My background is in selling technology in AI in corporate America. So this is a great question and a very important one. It's not going away. Technology and AI are going to continue to grow. There's also some real concerns around the way that they're being used and using them too much. So I think we need to absolutely have a thoughtful use of AI. They need to be technology and AI literate, but there's thoughtful ways to do it. They can't use it for everything. As an example, writing the essay in class so that you know that they wrote it. Then you have them go home and have them interact with the AI to ask it for different perspectives or things that they might not have thought of. So there's ways you can use this that make you smarter, that make your critical thinking stronger, that make you more adaptable. But with that said, more important than ever is going to be human connection, interpersonal connection, getting off of those screens, being outdoors. There's a mental health crisis going on with our children now because being on the screens too much. So we have to get them connected to each other. And a lot of the roles that are going to be out there are going to be more, it's going to need to have more interpersonal connection as well because AI is going to be able to do some of that. So it's also proven that the more, especially the younger kids are on screens, the worse they're doing in the score, in the tests. So they need to be off screens. They need to be actually reading and being literate in the AI and technology, but very, very thoughtful about the use of it and the time that they're spending on it. You don't need to spend all day on it to be good at it.
Thank you. India Palencia.
Thank you, John. To echo Jen, it's meant to be intentional. It's meant to enhance education. It should not be the table stakes or the base foundation of all of our education. Being a substitute teacher, I'm intimately familiar with the Chromebooks that are in every single classroom. They're to be used whenever they want to be used. Frankly, when I was doing my long-term sub, I steered clear of them until I was told I had to grab them out for the state testing. And I get it. They have to know how to click around or they won't even be able to do the state testing. And that follows them all the way up into high school. They have to know certain skill sets. And in today's world, it's not going away, to Jen's point. So we do need to enhance that education, but we need to limit as much of the unnecessary exposure to technology as possible. I'd love to go back to the rolling laptop cart or even a computer lab. That'd be wonderful because we need to have those kinesthetic learning skills that we lost when we went to typing or scrolling around. So that's my view on that. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And Debbie Jordan.
That was just a lead-in for me now. With this, technology is definitely not going away. It came out during the COVID time. We had to have a way to educate our children, so we bought Chromebooks to send them home so that way we had a way to communicate back and forth and still continue educating our kids until they got back into the classrooms. As far as the currently, we are looking at taking the Chromebooks and going back to more one-on-one teaching with the teachers in the elementary from grades 1 through 5, where they'll be doing like a 2-to-1 Chromebook and not have that all the time. So they are more, you know, one-on-one with teachers and other students. So that is coming down the pike right now. As far as the state is concerned, too, we're looking at finding out, creating new policies when it comes to how do we, you know, integrity with AI and how is that going to be used and making sure that our students, our teachers, our staff, everybody understands the use and how to use AI. I absolutely do not know how to use it. I'm trying to learn. And I have to have a child, actually one of my grandkids, show me how to do it because it's they know. But it's how do they use it? And we need to make sure that they're using it
properly intentional, so that way we know that they're safe too, and that's a whole nother issue altogether. So we just really have to be careful. It's here to stay. We just have to make it work. Thank you.
And Carlene Santillis.
Okay. I see it as a blessing and a curse. There's too much screen time is not good. There needs to be a good balance because screen time does not actually produce greater outcomes for the kids. AI, as Debbie mentioned, there's a safety mechanism that we need to also consider because there could be dangers with it. I met a parent on the campaign trail, and she had issues with her son who had a lot of mental health issues. And one of the things I asked her is, do you let him go to the park? Does he connect with other boys at the basketball court? And she says, no, he spends all day on the computer. So he's in the classroom on the Chromebook, and then he goes home, he's on the computer again. And so that does something to these students. And so it takes away from their critical thinking. It takes away from their writing as well. Thankfully, you know, they're going to be bringing back cursive writing in schools. So that went away for many years. And so I do believe that it again, a blessing and a curse. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is, what should the school district of Lee County be doing to address the challenge of declining enrollment? And the first person is Jen.
Fantastic. This is a really good question. I don't know how popular the answer is going to be, but I do think there needs to be a little bit of a relooking at the voucher program and the way that it works. Thank you. Appreciate the clap. Somebody likes it anyway. The way that it's being used right now, too much money is going away from the public schools. So they're not receiving the resources that they need or support that they need. So I do think that parents should be able to have that choice and take their kids wherever they want. The problem is they also need to be able to drive them. And if you're in a certain demographic, you don't have the ability to do that. So not everyone is really getting a choice. And then a lot of that money is going to students that have a ton of money. Their families are pretty wealthy and they don't actually need those vouchers. So I do think there should be a limit to who's able to get them, where they're able to be used. And I do think there should be some standards on the schools that are getting those vouchers. If you're getting state vouchers, we should know what you're teaching and how the scores are going and all of that as well. So my recommendation would be to make some changes, not to remove the parental rights. They still have the right to choice, but we have to fund the public schools. And right now, too much money is going to private schools and charter schools and other areas because they're taking those vouchers.
Thank you. And next is Carlene.
We should be spending taxpayer dollars wisely. If enrollment is declining in the school district, then we should not be building schools, right? What are we going to do with the classrooms? Who are we going to seat in those classrooms? Those funds should be allocated towards supporting educators, supporting school staff, building regrowing the morale, rather. The students, you know, I had a friend once upon a time that told me money is a motivator. Yes, it is a motivator. We need to be able to pay our teachers a decent living wage so that they can be more motivated. We cannot continue to expect to pay our teachers a minimum salary and expect them to show up for our kids. So in terms of declining enrollment, we should not be putting monies into building schools where there are no students to sit in those schools.
Thank you. Carl Baxter.
Well, to echo off what you're saying, you're absolutely correct. I think we have enough schools, and basically, number one, goes back to parent enrollment. I do believe in, as I said, universal choice. Why are we spending all this money on building schools? Okay, it goes back to tax dollars. Number one, like I say, follow the money. It usually tells you the tale, okay? The bottom line with declining enrollment, yes, I believe in universal choice. I'm kind of like what Dr. Aming said. And when everybody, there needs to be a program set in place to where we can actually vet these people that are getting these enrollments. Because number one, it's very simple. How can you be part or fight a system when you are part of the system? Very simple. Thank you.
Thank you. And Debbie Jordan.
Thank you for this question. When I hear the word decline in enrollment, this is a statewide, it's actually nation. It's not just here in Lee County. However, but when we look at Lee County, it is not in all areas. If you look at District 5 in Lehigh, they are so overpopulated that the schools are busting out of the seams. When you look at different areas in central Fort Myers, they're at capacity. So we're not, there's certain areas that you're losing some students, but then again, a lot of that is because of vouchers, because parents do have choices. And those choices are, they can be charter schools, homeschool, whatever that looks like, and that's because of the voucher program. And all we need is to make sure that the state is holding everybody at the same accountability. Whatever the public schools have to do, the private schools need to do, the charter schools need to do, everybody has to have the same. And I we have to tell our story better. We have to say we have great schools, we have academies, we have to tell our story better to actually sell to the parents and let them invite them in, let them see what our kids are doing. And if they come in and they see that we have kids that are going to college for free up in Boston, MIT, Harvard, because they're great. And we just don't tell our story enough.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Crystal Johnson.
So for me, school choice has always been up to the parent. It's just no longer meaning, it doesn't have the same meaning as it did when we first started using school choice. School choice was supposed to be able to, your child was supposed to be able to go to a school that was not necessarily down the street in your neighborhood. It was supposed to be like, maybe if I want my child, I live in Fort Myers and I want my child to go to North Fort Myers High or something like that. And that never happened, basically. School choice should be within public school range. You can send your child to whatever school you wanted to send them to. If the school is able to take them on, I think that's not a problem. But sending that money out the door, of course our schools, public schools, are going to dwindle down to nothing if we keep giving these vouchers out. So I'm all for parents' choice. But if you want to take them out of public schools, that's on you, the parent. You should be required to pay for your choice to remove them out of the public schools.
Thank you. And wrapping up, India Palencia.
Thank you, Amy. To the same point, yes, we need to have equal oversight on this voucher situation. If you're going to take public funds, there should be public oversight and public accountability. And right now, we just don't have that. We have 7 elected board members and an elected superintendent, 2 government relations employees, and 3 hired lobbyists who should be lobbying to have that changed so that we can get that funding back into our public school system. Because the beauty about the public school system is we take everybody. We make sure that every kid, no matter what, gets us quality public education. That is the promise of being an American. So that's part of it. But also, we have a lot of waste in our budget. It's a $2.9 billion budget, and there's a lot of ways that we can help offset that by redirecting those funds back into our classrooms. We need more mental health professionals in our classrooms. We need more support. We need to decrease class sizes. And the only way to do that is to invest in our classrooms. The first question you have to ask when you see declining enrollment is why? Why are parents pulling their kids from our public schools? Why do they feel like the public schools are not meeting their needs? The number one reason here in the state of Florida is bullying. We need to support our schools with more staff who can address those issues, because right now we don't have enough of that. And that goes back to your budget reflecting your values and spending money where it counts, the money that you do have, and not over $250,000 on lobbyists who aren't lobbying to fix our voucher situation.
Thank you. If you're just tuning into Gulf Coast Life, today we're listening back to last week's forum of candidates running for seats on the Lee County School Board. The forum was presented by the League of Women Voters of Lee County in partnership with WGCU Public Media and the News Press, and was co-moderated by me, John Davis, and News Press senior reporter Amy Bennett-Williams. All 11 qualified candidates were invited to attend. Six did, including Jen McDaigle vying for the District 1 seat, Carl Baxter and incumbent Debbie Jordan in the District 4 race, Crystal Johnson and Carlene Santillis in the District 5 election, and India Palencia in the at-large District 6 race. Today's special hour-long episode is a condensed version of the 90-minute forum. To hear or watch the full event, go to wgcu.org/gcl or visit the WGCU Public Media Facebook page where the event was live-streamed. And now, back to the forum. And our next question is, community schools such as Franklin Park Elementary and Colonial Elementary provide wraparound services for students and their families. What is your position on expanding community schools into other areas of Lee County? And we'll begin with Crystal Johnson.
That is a great help to our parents and the community. And I think that, yes, more of that would be wonderful. We should support our students. We should support our parents. Wraparound is a great service to be able to offer those families.
Thank you. And India Palencia.
I think it's great to have a before care and after care option. As a working parent, I've had to use that before. I've got three kids, and it's certainly going to be something that I'll have to depend on when I have one kid in middle school and two kids in elementary school, and I'm trying to run across all of Lee County when it takes you half an hour to get anywhere with our traffic. I understand that in a budget crunch, we do have to consider the financial capability of if our school district should be paying for that or if the families can take on that responsibility. And I think we can consider options for families who maybe don't make a lot of money, and we can say, okay, well, let's prorate those costs depending on what the family income is as well. But the families that can afford that should pay for that, especially in a place where we're in a very serious budget crunch and we have to watch our pennies. So everybody has to carry in this community. It's great to have those options at every school, especially as a working parent, I support it. But I do think that we have to consider income when we're looking at that.
Thank you. And Debbie Jordan.
Thank you for this question. Okay, so the community partnership schools, we actually have, there's a third one that's not listed up there. So we have Franklin Park Elementary, we have Colonial Elementary, we also have Fort Myers Middle School. There are four core partners when it comes to the community partnership school. You have your health, your education, your university, and your nonprofit, which the nonprofit for the community partnership school is the United Way. This provides services to not just our teachers, our students, our community. It's for everyone. And it is, we have our first Lee Health is at Franklin Park with a clinic there. So if a child is sick, the parent actually can send their child over. The child's not going to miss school. If someone in the neighborhood needs a doctor, they can come. They don't come at the same time as the children are there at the school. But I believe in this, in the community partnership schools. I believe that expanding it would be phenomenal if we could get it in every school. They all want it because it does do a great service, because whatever you need, you can get at your school. And the attendance is greater because there's no reason for them not to be there. If they need food to go home, they feed the community. So everything is there for the needs of the community. So me personally, I love this.
Thank you. And Jen McDaigle.
Yeah, great question. And I'm actually learning some new things about this while we're up here, so fantastic. As a parent, this sounds phenomenal to me, and I'll tell you for sure, as the parent of a very medically complex child, this would have been incredibly valuable to have at the time while my daughter was still with us. So the answer to the question is yes, absolutely. I do think that we should try to do more of this. The problem is the same students I was talking about before that don't really get a choice with the vouchers are the ones who would really need this the most. So I do think there needs to be some thought in this, into how we do it. And if we actually use the budget better and had some more transparency into how that budget was being used, I think there would actually be some more funding available to do this kind of stuff so that our children are actually being supported.
Thank you. And Carlene.
This is right up my alley. It is. Because of my community, District 5 needs it. So I definitely support expanding the community school wraparound services. But it has to be done with strategy. And it needs to be on a needs basis. I'm not speaking into the microphone. It has to be done on a needs basis. And we have to be able to measure the outcomes. There are plenty of families in my area that could use these services because over in my community, as many of you may or may not know, a lot of families over there are working 2 and 3 jobs just to make ends meet. So having those services available to help these students is critical and it's important. So I definitely support the expansion of that.
Thank you. And Mr. Baxter.
That's a very good question. I think I'm just going to follow the lead and wrap it up very simple. Those great ideas, they're wonderful. I will support all of those, but I'm going to tell you right up front, we have to be very careful, and it all should be done on a needs basis. I support what Dr. Jordan said about the, we need those, y'all got very good, I support all of those ideas. But we have to have something in place based on a needs basis, because there's nothing free but Jesus. Okay, so I'm going to be honest with you. So the bottom line is we've got to have an assessment done on these wraparound services, partnerships. I'm very big on that. I've learned a lot of that stuff being on the campaign trail, on the listening tour. So I would support it on a full scale. So all of you guys answer my question, and I will support that.
Thank you. The next question is, what should the school district do to improve positive outcomes for the most vulnerable populations? And the first person is Debbie Jordan.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So if Lee County is a minority-majority district, period. No matter what anybody wants to think, that's exactly who we are. When it comes to our student population, I think in bringing the positive outcomes, I think it is definitely communications, involving and engaging with parents, because we understand that if parents or guardians or uncles or aunts, any part of the family, if they're involved in their child, in their education, they're always going to succeed. They're going to do so much better. And so to me, I think that, you know, we just have to continue to be out there in the community, to continue to involve and pull those families in. And the schools, like the community partnership schools, they do an excellent job in bringing in the entire family and showing parents how they can help, even if it's just 5 minutes of helping a child to sit and listen to them read or have them participate in different events. But there's always something you can do to increase that. But it definitely starts, I think, with the family and the schools together.
Thank you. Carl Baxter.
Very good. I'm going to tell you right up front. You said earlier that we're not all, everybody's saying they're not a politician. Well, we all are politicians because we're up here, okay? We all are politicians. So when you say that to me, you're not a politician, because I'm going to tell you right now, I am a politician because I wouldn't be up here. It goes back to what Dr. Jordan was saying about the partnership. You're going to learn a lot of this stuff when you're out there, boots on the ground with these community partnerships and the vulnerable students. The thing about it is it's very, very, very simple. You've got to get those parents involved. And if you're not a politician and you're not out there on the streets, how can you get those parents involved when you're on the school board and you're not out there working? So I would support that very much. Parent engagement. I'm really big on parent engagement and community involvement. So that piggybacks off the former question about the wraparound services to meet those needs. So I would support that. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you. India.
Thank you, Amy. We've touched on a particular vulnerable population, but I would like to actually speak about another one, which is our exceptional student education students.
historically, we have a huge issue in our county about making sure that we not only just meet their needs, but we actually deliver on state statute, federal statute, and even our own board policies. So we talk about engaging our community and engaging these families, but what happens when we drop the ball and we disengage them? And that's what we're seeing with our exceptional student education program. And then we make financial decisions like deciding maybe we're going to put the Buckingham Exceptional Student Center in with the Royal Palm Academy, which are two entirely different vulnerable student populations. And it makes no sense to make those kinds of decisions just purely based off of the fact that we don't have enough money for it, especially when we're spending money on things that are so wasteful. So we have to make sure that we put our money where our mouth is when it comes to our vulnerable student populations like our ESE kids, and that we meet the at minimum the state and federal law to make sure that they have the support they need and that we deliver on their promise with IDEA and IEPs and everything like that.
Thank you. Crystal Johnson.
Yes, I agree with that. As far as our vulnerable student population, yes, it is our ESC students who are going without their services because we can't provide services because we're cutting support staff. And the teachers don't have time to address the accommodations the appropriate way. Some of them are not even trained appropriately to handle ESE services. So, yes, they need to figure out that budget and make sure that the money gets back to the classroom. That is how you address that. You make sure that the money goes, they say that the money goes with the student. Well, the money should be reaching the student.
Thank you. Jen.
Yeah, so this is obviously very close to my heart. With my daughter, I lived it, and it is absolutely detrimental when the exceptional students are not getting the support that they need, especially when it's legally required and the parents don't know that they're not getting those services. But it goes back to budgeting. We have to manage the budget better and be more fiscally responsible so that the students are getting the money. If we're budgeting better, we can make sure that we're getting qualified teachers to manage these specific areas that have to be managed. We're not non-renewing upwards of 500 teachers and staff. We can keep them and also bring in the right training. So we need more mental health professionals, not less, and they're letting them go. So we need to be able to bring in all of that, have a budget that allows us to provide what these students need in order to be successful. If we're not providing them with the resources, then they're not going to be able to be successful.
Thank you. And Carlene?
Well, first we need to listen to the parents, and we need to learn about our parents. We need to identify students who are struggling early and provide the interventions that they need for those students. It's unfair to expect the same outcome if all students aren't starting from the same place. We have students who have learning disabilities. We have our vulnerable population with the ESEs and students with behavioral issues. Another thing is we need to be able to hold parents accountable for their children if they are constantly disrupting the classroom with behavioral problems. That cuts into instruction time, and the teacher has to, you know, pay attention to that particular student or you know, stop what they're doing, and it takes the learning time away from the other students in the classroom. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is, what do you believe are the most important characteristics of an effective school board? And India will start us off, please.
I think the most important characteristic of an effective school board is that they listen. That is the main motivating factor that pushed me to decide to run for the school board, was because I found myself at a podium speaking to a board and I was being ignored. And it wasn't just me, it was everyone else in that room that was walking up to that podium. There were two people looking at me. The rest of them, I mean, one of them looked like they were asleep, the others were talking to each other, and I felt like they were ignoring everyone in the room. So we have to have people who listen, who are active participants in the listening process. and who comment on what they heard and take action on what they heard. That, to me, is the most important characteristic of an effective school board member, because if you don't know what needs to get done, you cannot be effective. You have to hear the constituents. You are voted into this position by the people. You are for the people. So that is your job, is to listen to them, whether you like it or not.
Thank you. Debbie?
So for me, an effective school board is actually a board that, one, is able to have conversations, because the only time that we can actually speak to one another is when we're at that dais, because of sunshine. And we have to be able to have the hard conversations. Sometimes it's not going to be the people are not going to like it a lot, but you know what? That's our job. So we need to make sure that we can converse about topics that not necessarily we want to have a discussion on, but we have to do it with respect as well. You have to be able to respect one another. You have to be able to listen. The conversation, you have to, the follow through, making sure that when you're listening and you're saying you're going to do something, that you do it. You make sure that you follow up on what you say you're going to do, and hold those people accountable, hold us accountable for what we're not doing. Because I believe that, you know, working collectively, I don't care who you are, we need to make sure we're doing that, because that is on us for the community.
Thank you. Carlene.
So one of the most important characteristics, I believe, of an effective school board member is taking accountability. The public, the voters are your boss, right? They vote for you, and you are elected by them, and you have to be able to be accountable. If something goes wrong, you have to be able to stand in front of your bosses, for lack of a better term, and answer to them. Ask tough questions, especially as a school board member. Every question that you ask has to be in the benefit of the classroom. How is it going to benefit the students in the classroom? How is it going to support the teachers? How is it going to support school staff? How is it going to overall benefit the community?
Thank you. And Jen?
Yeah, this is a great question. I think obviously number one, to India's point and maybe others, is listening. You have to be able to listen and maybe even have empathy. If you can't have empathy, at least maybe try to have some sympathy for what the parents and the teachers and the support staff and the students are facing and they're enduring. They need to spend time in the classrooms and with these students. I just try to imagine if anybody on the board had spent a single day with me, with my oldest daughter, Quillen, when she was alive, and all the equipment that she had in medical equipment, and while we had a baby there as well, and not being able to sleep at night because you're so worried that they're going to have a seizure, other things are going to happen. Might they legislate differently and make me spend less time fighting and advocating for her to get the resources that she needed, if they had some understanding of what that looked like? Might they advocate differently to these kids with behavioral needs if they could see what those parents were dealing with, instead of coming from a place of no before they even meet the child and saying find somewhere else for them to go?
Thank you. Carl.
Thank you so much for that. It's very simple. I'm going to piggyback off of that. And ESE is one of my specialties that I started with. It's very, very simple. I'm going to sum it up in one word. It's be approachable. You got to be approachable. When I say approachable, you just don't come into a meeting and hold your head down like some of my counterparts here said. But be approachable. Not only being approachable, but be honest. All right? Be honest. Get the real answers. Don't throw it off on your staff to do the job for you. You all elected us to be, and this is one of the reasons why I don't believe in an elected superintendent. I'm going to be straight up with you because, you know, you guys are our boss. So honesty, transparent is number one. Just be straight up and be approachable. Thank you.
Thanks. Crystal.
Characteristics, I'm thinking you need to be, the board should reflect this community that it serves. It should not be a one-size-fits-all type of thing, because as we all know, Lee County is a very diverse community, and the board should reflect that. I need the board to be relatable. I need them to be able to understand where I'm coming from as a parent, as an advocate, as a person who is here speaking up for something I need or, you know, want in my district. So, yes, you have to be relatable. They should have good characteristics. They should be good people and want to make sure we should all have the same vision as far as our children come first. And the job is to educate. If our children are failing at 49% of our students are reading below grade level or doing math below grade level, and yet we're celebrating a B in the district, you know, what does that tell those students? We celebrate that half, and the 49%, it doesn't matter, I guess. So that's what I'm saying. We need to do better as a district, and I believe we can. So you should have good characteristics and be relatable.
Thank you.
We've been listening back to last week's forum with candidates running for seats on the Lee County School Board, hosted by WGCU, the League of Women Voters of Lee County, and the News Press. This has been a condensed version of that forum. To hear or watch the full event, including candidates' responses to additional questions and their closing statements, go to wgcu.org/GCL, where you can hear any of our episodes in their entirety, or visit the WGCU Public Media Facebook page where the forum was live streamed. And remember, primary election day here in Florida is just over a month away on August 18th. To register to vote, check your registration status, change your party affiliation, or to request a vote by mail ballot, contact your county supervisor of elections office. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, and PR for Southwest Florida.